Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Andy Bass. Andy is based in the UK. He's a consultant, author, and speaker who works with businesses to find and exploit their hidden assets. He's worked with organizations in the UK, US, and Far East. And prior to his consulting career, he was a lecturer at several business schools. And he has written a book entitled Start With What Works, A Faster Way to Grow Your Business, as well as some other books that he's written. We're going to be discussing some of the concepts from that book and looking forward to today's conversation with Andy. Well, can you give our audience just a little bit of your story, a little bit of your background and how you've gotten to where you are today?
Yeah, yes, of course. So I work with businesses to help them to find their hidden resources, essentially. I've always found that going into clients, they so often had the answers already. And could we help them to find these things that they've already kind of paid for and they've already got on staff? And the journey into that starts, I guess, finding myself at college, not doing what I'd originally expected. I was going to be a dentist, you know.
Ah.
And for one reason or another, I ended up doing completely differently, computer science and what we call over here anyway, ergonomics, which I guess you guys would probably know as human factors. So the application of human sciences to technology. And it was a great time to be doing both computing and ergonomics because people were, you know, Apple Macs were fairly new and sure. People were very interested in that interaction between the two things. So I did a PhD in computer science. And then found myself teaching psychology and AI in a business school for a few years. We might come back to what I learned there because I think that's important in terms of the work I do now. But then I kind of felt, I want to know whether the things we're teaching really work. Hmm. Like, do they really work for clients? So sure. I and a friend of mine who was more of the salesman, if you like, we started consulting. We started going out trying to find clients and help them. And this is back 25 years, I guess, now. And since then, Paul, my business partner at the time, I always say we used to be business partners, but now we're friends again. he decided to do something else. Right. I've carried on with the consulting, worked with some sure. great companies and some large ones that put, you know, famous names. And but also where I find my real sweet spot is kind of mid-size B2B, doing packaging or in the automotive supply chain. I especially enjoy businesses where they're using a lot of science, technology, and contributing then to the end manufacturer. And I find the things that go on in those businesses particularly fascinating.
Yeah, well, we definitely want to talk about your kind of your work and some of the lessons that you've learned. A lot of our listeners are first-time leaders, first-time right. CEOs. Okay. And so we're definitely loved your insights and encourage people. I've read your Start With What Works book, and we want to talk about that. And you have some other books, too, that you've written. And we definitely would love to hear kind of how you think around business and right. resources, and I think will be definitely be helpful to those listening. We're living in a world where there's a lot of rapid change, and the pace has picked up. At least it feels yeah. like in the last couple of years with AI and all that that's going on. But talk about as a leader how to see things differently. You talk about that with Start With Works, but talk a little bit about that of you know. That perspective, that lens that,
sure.
that you
okay.
look at.
So I think like to connect my work to the trends that you're talking about. I mean, even if we'd been speaking 4 or 5 years ago, you could have just said what you've just said, how fast mm-hmm. the world is. And it seems faster.
Sure.
And then since then we've had the pandemic and we've got the yep. wars and so on and so forth. So, you know, there's a principle, different people have said it, different ways that if your rate of learning isn't as fast as the rate of change, then you're in trouble. So you've got to learn more quickly. And what does that mean by learning? I don't think it means like sending people off to business school to learn more theories. I think what it means is learning to see the world the outside world in new ways, but also to see what you've already got in new ways. And I said it at the top that I would go into clients and see how often they already had the answers and they're not noticing them. So for me, becoming very sensitized to your underappreciated, overlooked assets, resources, know-how that you can reconfigure quickly to meet the challenges as your customers' needs change, or as your supply chain maybe needs to change, and so on. So it's about almost, and this is where the computer science mind comes in, understanding your business in kind of modular terms, and then seeing that those modules can be used in different ways. We can get into like, how do you find those and how you plug them together as we go along.
I saw one of your talks where you gave a visual of taking different parts from different industries and how somebody came up with connecting those ideas to come up with a product or service. Talk about just some of the real life examples that you've seen where companies have kind of taken a look at kind of what their assets are and coming up with something that, they already had, but they didn't realize it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I think the diagram you're talking about is probably the Uber example. Everybody knows about right. Uber. Interesting thing about Uber is that all the technologies they used already existed, right? And yet they still disrupted a global industry. So this is not a counsel of a lack of ambition that you use the stuff you already got. This is saying you can actually do a heck of a lot by rethinking. So Uber is a great example because there was already GPS, there was already like Trustpilot type ratings. There are obviously already taxis. So you put those things in smartphones. Some of the examples that I like to talk about, one, and I'll try and give a range like the very different. So one would be Amazon Web Services. If you think about that, they did something that a lot of businesses can do, which is they started out as a bookstore, and then they realized, hey, anything that we could list on our website that we can deliver through the mail, we could sell. So that was the first level of realizing, right? Sure. But then they went, hey, all the technology we've built to be able to run this business, that technology could be the cloud technology, that could be provided to other people. And that became Amazon Web Services, which was not a business that was originally envisaged, but actually is the most profitable bit. In fact, for a long time, it was the only bit of Amazon that even made money. And to give you a non-digital example, because people sometimes will say, well, okay, that's a digital one. Think of Lotus Cars, right? Storied sports car manufacturer. They were building racing cars and sports cars. And as a side effect of doing that, they developed an ability to build and understand automotive suspension systems. They then took that and started to consult with the big major car manufacturers. And that's about half their business. And the two work together beautifully. So that's the sort of idea that there could be all kinds of things that you're doing that have value. And I have a set of questions that you can start to ask yourself to find and uncover these things.
I was interviewing someone from used to be the head of marketing in a division of Lego. And she was talking about the innovation that took place there. And I think you have a story around Legos. One of the pieces that they were missing kind of as they were thinking about kind of their market. Can you relay that story, kind of how they've...
Yeah, Lego's really interesting for a lot of reasons. One of them is that, I talk in the book, how do we miss... here's me talking about, you've got hidden resources. Very interesting, how do we miss those resources? And there are various ways that we do that. But one of them is because we have a belief, a very fixed belief. Now, Lego, they had a fixed belief, and then we're talking about the sort of end of the 90s now, that Lego was for kids. And so the fact that adults loved Lego and that there was a sizable self-organized Lego adult community who could potentially be a great resource because they can spend more money and they can tell you what Lego kits are cool. They deliberately ignored those because there was this belief, no, we're for kids. Adults have no business playing with Lego, right? Now, when the new CEO came in, Jürgen Wittnusdorp came in and really turned Lego around, and that you've seen Lego so well in this century. One of the things they said was, let's embrace what they call the adult fans of Lego. And so it's a beautiful example of how, of another hidden asset, in this case, an underserved customer base, was actually deliberately ignored.
Mm. So when you talk about the hidden assets, and my work is around putting teams together and helping companies with talent, talk a little bit about that, the hidden assets of that can be people within the organization that you maybe are not tapping into. And as first-time leaders, they typically inherit teams and maybe don't have the right people in the right spots. But any thoughts around that as far as how it relates to people?
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because you know there's that cliche, people are our greatest resource.
Sure.
And you look at the ways that companies actually treat their people, and it's not always kind of consistent with that. Mm. In a way, I guess what I'm saying, and I'm going to guess what you say as well, Mark, is that that cliche is true, right? And that, again, it's our reasons for why do we kind of neglect that. I would say the first line leaders, look, it's easier now still to stay in touch with the front line. As you become more senior, you maybe find yourself becoming more distant from them until you get to be CEO and you hardly ever speak to someone on the shop floor. You hardly ever speak to somebody on the loading dock or somebody who's on the phone. You're spending all your time looking at spreadsheets and talking to bankers and your CFO. And I think that the best leaders, they always make sure to stay in touch with what's going on the ground level, if you like. So I think that's the single biggest thing. There's lots of other interesting issues, you know, that you talked about in terms of what do you do with them if you've got a person in the wrong place and so on. But I would say really just to take that idea of that people are our greatest resource very seriously and engage them in the kind of thinking that I'm talking about. I could just give you a very quick example of I'm not a factory operations guy. Right. So I don't do I'm conversant with Six Sigma, but I'm not, right. I've not got my green belt even, let alone my black belt. But I have done some factory improvement. And the way that we did it was to really take this idea seriously and say to people on the shop floor, you know the plant better than anybody. How do we improve it? And as long as you set that up right and make the management feel comfortable, which is the trick, we've seen on-time delivery improve, quality improve, accidents come down, all that sort of hard measures through taking that idea seriously about the people that you want to follow you.
You talk about in your start with what works, I believe, about profit amplification. Talk a little bit about that and just that whole idea as far as around that how somebody can take a look differently at that.
Well, you know, the essence of profit, what I mean by that profit amplification is that the value to the customer or the client goes up more quickly than the additional cost of resources that you're adding. I need to give example to make this concrete.
Yep.
But that's the idea. So you've got to think about value from the customer's point of view. Again, almost a cliche, Mark, but how many people really take it that seriously? Let me give you the example that is in the foreword of the book. I didn't write it, but it's by a guy called Rory Sutherland, who is a maybe the most influential British advertising guy, and I think increasingly around the world, a wonderful, wonderful man. And he was telling a story about a woman in Africa. She was trying to support herself. She was supporting herself selling hard-boiled eggs to construction workers for lunch. And what she discovered was that if she cut the egg in half, put in a tomato and some leaves and some herbs, now it wasn't a hard-boiled egg anymore. It was lunch. And the difference between a hard-boiled egg and lunch was she could charge twice as much for lunch than she could for the hard-boiled egg. And it didn't cost her anywhere near twice as much to put that on. That's the amplification. And it's realizing that lunch has more value than an egg. Do you want a big business example? Because obviously that's a bit folksy. The principle's the same. So Cardinal Health, you know, a big health services provider, They did the same sort of thing. They were in the surgical, in one way, they were in the surgical instrument business, and it's a commodity, right? There were a couple of competitors who could easily match their price and quality. They were going to get out of that business. Instead of doing that, what they did was they went and looked at surgical teams using their stuff, and they watched the way that nurses were spending all their time managing stock and getting things ready for the operations rather than nursing. And they said, why don't we put kits together, get some top surgeons, figure out what you need for standard procedures, use just-in-time ordering. We're very good at that kind of thing. We have expertise on computing, ordering systems and distribution, and just because they did drug distribution, they can get drugs to people quickly, all that. Use all of those tools and sell surgical kits. They're called pre-source. And it catapulted them out of that trap of being in a commodity. And again, the amplification is there because everybody benefits, but the cost of doing it was not as much as the value that was created. There was a synergy.
I think a lot of companies talk about innovation. We want to be innovative. I just have a conversation with a CEO of a company last week, and that was the thing that they were there said, we need an innovation leader. But I think a lot of times it's the new idea that they're looking for versus, you know, something that you probably, you talk about the hidden assets within the company. But as a leader thinking innovatively, what advice would you give somebody as they're, you know, I think you talk about letting the world teach you what works and around innovation. Talk a little bit of your thoughts around that.
Well, I'm very influenced in that by the Lean Startup movement, which I guess people would know Eric Ries's book, Lean Startup. If you don't, then it's well worth looking at it. Now, that is standard now in startup world, and there are some big companies that have used it. This is where the language of minimum viable product and pivot comes. But like a lot of things, once they become jargon, people kind of forget, you know, exactly the meaning. I think on innovation, I'd say a couple of things. I'd say getting your people to think about themselves, to start thinking, what are our hidden assets? In and of itself produces innovative ideas that are potentially more feasible for you because they're based in things that you've already got, rather than, for example, pulling something in, like some flash of out of the blue. So sure. I think you've got more chance of finding something that genuinely meets your customers' needs if you build on things that you're already doing. And then the whole let the world teach you what works lean startup idea is that you figure out what has to be true for that business idea to work, and you test that assumption. So the classic example, or a classic example, is two companies, Webvan, which was one of these dot-com darlings, webvan.com, which was online groceries, versus Zappos shoes. So just very briefly, Webvan raised a huge amount of money, $800 million, I think, from Sequoia Capital and people like that. Clever people. They had a beautiful business plan. They did market research. People will buy their groceries online. This is the year 2000. Well, guess what? They said they would and they didn't. Right? Because what people tell you they'll do versus what they actually do are two different things. What Zappos did was they went to their local shoe shop. They took photos of the shoes. They put them on a website. If anybody ordered the shoes, they went to the shoe shop, bought them at retail, took them round to the person's house. By doing that, they validated the assumption on which the whole business depends, which is, will people order shoes they haven't tried on? And there's a whole load of assumptions, but that's the first one. Because if people won't order shoes, then there's no business. And so I think let the world teach you rather than letting people tell you.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Talk about your books that you've written, and again, kind of for somebody who's a new leader, kind of the premise of it. I would love to hear kind of.
Well, sure. So I've written 3.5 books, if you like, because I co-authored one. There's a one ages ago called The Performance Papers, which is a bit dated in some ways, like the examples are old, but there's some great stuff in there for new leaders, because it talks about leadership and strategy and teams and what will change in management or what won't. And I think that stuff stands up. The two most recent ones we talked about, Start With What Works. The other that I just wrote last year is called Committed Action. Very relevant, I think, for any leader, because it's about how do you gain the commitment of people. And I have a little formula in there called the CEO formula, which is foster curiosity, invite curiosity, that's the C, encourage exploration, which is the E, and then transfer ownership, which is the O. And I give examples of how that works. The best single example I can give is Robin Williams in Dead Poets Society. So if you want to know how to engage people, go back and watch Dead Poets Society, and you'll see that he does things to, first of all, to get them curious, Then he gets them exploring, and then he transfers ownership. They create their own poetry society. And in the book, I kind of break that down. It's that you get, it's those three steps. So that's what Committed Action's about.
Great. Well, tell me, with, I know you probably are continuing to learn and to grow, as far as any additional books that you have read in the last couple of years that you think would be helpful for our audience to put on their reading list.
Yeah, sure. Well, you said Anne Latham was on recently.
Yes. Correct.
Just as very kindly. So her book, The Power of Clarity, is a tremendously good book, because it's so easy for people to think they're talking, understanding each other and be talking at cross purposes, the way language can kind of trip us up. So, and I guess they can check your podcast out with sure. Anne. So that's a great book. I think Lean Startup, if you don't know that stuff, is, I'm a big Eric Ries fan. I also really like something a bit more almost like philosophical. I like Nassim Taleb's stuff a lot, the guy that wrote The Black Swan and so on. I think if you want to think about, think strategically, you have to think about how do you deal with a world you can't predict. And you were saying earlier on, the world changes really fast. And Taleb is very good on how do we make sure that we're most likely to be ready for things that we can't predict. And how can we position ourselves and our bets, if you like, because we're all taking bets, whether you're the CEO or whether you're thinking about what to do in your own career. So I would recommend any of his stuff. Anti-Fragile, I think, is probably the one I'd point people to.
So what do you do outside of work to recharge?
Well, it's funny, actually, because today is a very auspicious day in that regard. I play the guitar. I play in a rock band.
Okay.
But I describe myself sometimes as a failed stand-up comedian. And the main problem having been that I wasn't funny, that was the problem. But I did a course 15 years ago, and then after that I did some gigs. And I did, okay, right? I had some wins and some losses. But tonight, for fun, I'm going back on stand-up comedy course with the same teacher for a kind of a refresher and so on. So I will probably, we do 7 weeks and there's a showcase at the end. Uh-huh. If that goes okay, I might do some open mics and stuff again around Birmingham. Uh-huh. The world's opened up again and, you know.
I think you're the first guest that we've had on that does stand-up comedy, at least that I know, I'm aware of. So that's right. That's great. What parting advice would you give a new leader that you think would be helpful?
Well, I think I go back to what we said, like the stay in touch with the front line. And don't get too impressed with being a manager and a leader and all this kind of stuff. And because a lot of that is frankly BS. And if you look at, if you're ambitious, the best companies, the leaders are close to the action. And you watch some disasters and you'll see it's when the leader's lost touch. So I would say that was my number one, is stay in touch with the actual work and the people that do it.
Yeah, great advice. So how would someone learn more about your work and your books?
Yeah, so I think the best thing to do would be to go to my website. Can we stick the link in the notes? And
yep,
you can,
absolutely.
They can download their free chapters of the books. And so they can get everything from there.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to reading your other books. I definitely enjoyed Start With What Works, and wish you continued success in all that you're doing.
Thank you very much, Mark. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.